Hi, realrabbinyc.com. That's me. It's Juliet, the rabbi. It's Thursday already. I can't believe it. We've rolled around to Shabbos again already tomorrow. Oh, so here we are. It's been a big week for me. I don't know about for you. I mean, it's a big week for the world, but that's every week. When Sunday rolled around this past week, I actually sang in front of a crowd of over 200 people. It was, I'd never done that before. It was really scary. I was really nervous, but it was my second funeral and I did well. And I guess somehow, you know, it's going to get easier every time, right? And that was really a big accomplishment. But of course, it was with the help and encouragement of various people in my life coaching me. I have a voice coach, teacher. I have other people, you know, telling me that I could do it. And I just kept remembering teachers saying, just be present. Like people who are coaching me in voice, just be present, be completely present. And I was, and it was pretty incredible because as people left, they thanked me for a beautiful service and, oh, you have such a beautiful voice. And wow, did that feel good. It was such an accomplishment. Why did I sing in front of more than 200 people? No, it was not a performance. It was for a funeral. It was for a memorial service. It was a tragic death of a man in his late 50s who died of brain cancer. And I was the rabbi who officiated. And of course, I wanted to do well in order to honor him and his family. I mean, don't you always, right? It's not just for you. Of course, you want to feel good, but it's so that it's for them, right? And I met with his wife and their children, all three of them in their 20s, a couple of days before. And here are three children whose weddings he won't be attending at some future date, and no anniversaries and holidays and birthdays, no more. No longer will he be celebrating with them. Very sad, right? And here was this man, an overachieving, high performer. He wanted to be everything to everyone. This is what his wife kept telling me. Very, extremely positive and determined. He made it through 4 years with this cancer. And the prognosis for this type of cancer is a year and a half. She was like, all over the internet, that's what you'll find. And even more so, he'd accomplished this despite starting at the beginning of a pandemic. Which pandemic? Remember COVID? It was exactly, so here we are in March. It was exactly 4 years ago in March that he was diagnosed as the city was shutting down, as New York City was shutting down. I said in my eulogy, he was an overachiever, not only in life, but in death too, extending his life, right, living that long. He was a star basketball player, like the best basketball player at his age in his high school in Chicago. He was a successful entrepreneur. He'd coached others constantly, and he even coached himself. I mean, how else can a person make it through, right? He'd saved thousands of inspirational quotes sent to him by his own coach to keep himself going. He saved them. Phrases like, faith embraces uncertainty. He was a model patient. He never complained. He always encouraged other people, his children. Yeah, you're doing great. Keep going. Yeah. Always smiling, never burdening his family to the last days. And this was, you know, as I said, like in the Shiva and in the eulogy, like what a beautiful gift he gave them at the end of his life. And he gave them another gift, that of presence in his last 4 years. this is something that hadn't been the case for most of his married and parenting life. He had not been present physically, probably not emotionally either, because he was taking care of the whole rest of the world. When you need to be there for all, in the end, you're present for very little. This week in Torah, we begin the book of Leviticus, Vayikra, the third of the five books of Moses. And it begins with sacrifices, gifts to God to make expiations for one's sins, for incurring guilt. Maybe we don't like the word sin. It's just like so old-fashioned. What does that mean, right? It's such a harsh word. But some of the sins that they talk about in the Torah are done knowingly and intentionally, and others are done unwittingly. And they make the differentiation. And so for each type of wrongdoing, there are specific types of sacrifices using various animals, for instance. And adjustments are made depending on the means of those making the expiation, making the sacrifice, and their available resources. So here's this man that I never met, whose funeral I did, whose memorial service I led. He was a good man. He was a great man, as many attested, with a big heart, huge heart, loved by so many people. It was evident by the large numbers of people present at his memorial. And he loved very deeply and very fiercely. As soon as he knew he was going to die, he put his affairs in order. He sold his company. He made sure his wife would not be left with insurmountable medical debt or even any debt at all. I mean, to me, that's a sin when you that our American government incurs on the American people because of lack of universal health care. That is an intentional sin. I don't know how our government is going to make expiation for that, but talk about sins. But here's a man, he was a good guy. He tried really hard to be a good person. So what's sin got to do with him? The U.S. government, sure, we could see, right? But him? He tried so hard. He wanted to be everything to everyone. He took his Jewish values that he learned at home, either explicitly or implicitly. I don't know how he learned them, but he brought them out into the world, coaching young people from underprivileged families. And I think, you know, like after I was thinking about this, like here's a person, not religious. He marries, this is an interfaith family. He marries a woman who's not Jewish. He doesn't bring up his kids Jewish. I mean, you know, they're exposed to the holidays and stuff like that, but like nothing more serious than that. And you know, and it's like, he was so all-American, you know, just so all-American. And so how does a person like that, you know, like, how do we know that that's Jewish values? It just seems to me, like in his striving, that he is working so hard at being, he's, you know, here's this entrepreneur. It's like, it comes from a tradition of a family, of a people who's been oppressed and been experienced discrimination, not just for centuries, but for millennia, right? And have had to be creative and had to push really hard in order to make it, right? To make it in the world. And so, and then there's this idea, so he's got those entrepreneurial skills and the push and the drive, right? And then he's also got this idea that somehow he got it from somewhere, and I think it's Jewish values, that when your people have made it in a place, you've made it, then it's time to give back. And, you know, he goes out and he's coaching kids from underprivileged families and, you know, figuring, well, my kids are okay. Like, I know, you know, they're being taken care of. I gave them everything, right? I need to give to the rest of the world. the problem is, when you try that hard, when you're that driven, balance is not one of the achievements. When you're trying to achieve so much, balance is not one of the achievements you can boast about in life. When you want to be everything to everyone, you're likely to disappoint. Despite all his efforts, he still could not achieve all. He could not save the world. He was absent while he was present for other people. All these people that said, oh, he's my best friend. He's one of my best friends. Like hundreds of people who thought that way, right? Who felt that way. What a great guy. Meanwhile, he was absent and often harsh with his own children as he pushed them to do their best. I think he wanted to make sure that they knew that this world is tough and that to survive, it's like, you've got all these advantages, but hey, you need to know how to survive and you have to be tough in this world. And in my eulogy, I said, I understood this. I mean, after all, I'm a parent, I'm a mother. Have I not done these things? Have I not been harsh? Have I not been harsh when I thought that would instill a sense of responsibility in my children? Yeah. Do I feel bad about it? Yeah. Sometimes, you know, like, I mean, I think I balanced it, but maybe there were times where I was a little too harsh. I don't know. Have I been absent, if only in my mind, even if I was physically present? Of course. We're all guilty of these things, as hard as we try. So after the memorial service, the family asked if I would lead a Shiva Minyan the next night. It was such a compliment. It was like, we loved what you did. You know, could you? And I was like, of course, sure. And they didn't want a traditional service. All day long, they were back and forth, maybe going to cancel. The mother hurt her back. All these things. And I was like, I need some answers. I need to know what I'm bringing, what I'm preparing for here. Do they want a traditional evening service with all the prayers? And finally in the afternoon, it was like, no, we're all coming from really different places. And no, we don't want anything. We don't really know the prayers. We don't care about that so much. Most of us don't. So I decided I was going to experiment with them. And I brought my Shruti box, which is that Indian, it's like a harmonium. Some people call it a harmonium. This is not a harmonium, but it's like, it looks kind of like that. And so I decided I was going to bring it and lead them in Hebrew chant. And after each chant, and before and after, I offered an intention and a focus. And I said, see what memories or thoughts come up for you in the silence after the chant. And see what needs to be shared. And it worked out really well. I was very, very happy that they were able to respond. And it was amazing, actually. And after one chant about healing through nurture, healing the world. This is a Shefa Gold chant, healing the world through the majesty of nurture. It's a line, L'takein olam b'malchut shaddai. It's a line from the, can't think right now. So after that chant, the deceased's wife shared a story. She had actually found her husband's relentless positivity exhausting. And one day she finally said to him, this must be really hard for you and really scary for you. And immediately tears sprung to his eyes and he said, yes. And thank you. And that was it. Like, that was the only moment, apparently. And so she told that story, which I was really happy that she would, because I felt like there was, you know, how there was a lesson in that for her sons, especially, who the whole time I never saw them cry at all, like not a tear, barely. Maybe there was a moment, I don't know. You know, everybody, his sons, talked about what a gift he'd given them, being so positive. But I had to point out after, you know, in her story that while giving one gift, he'd deprived them of another. I mean, it was a beautiful thing that he did for them. He didn't want to burden them. And that intention and that ability, like, wow, what strength. And yet, it's a really beautiful thing to give, right? For other people to be able to give. And we want to take care of other people sometimes. We don't want it to be one way. And one of his boys said, you know, I always wanted to know what I could do for him, but there was never anything. Instead, he was always doing for me. He was like getting ice cream and pizza and, you know, like he was the one providing and I could never do anything for him. And then in the next sentence, he said like, wow, like what a way to die with dignity. Like what an example. And he was like shaking his head in admiration. And I thought, yeah, and because he'd also modeled that one must never be vulnerable. We can't show vulnerability, especially if you're a man. And like I said, not one tear fell from his grown son's eyes. And he deprived them of the ability to give. True, he learned at the end to be truly present, finally, in his life. He'd finally learned to stop striving and pushing and running, but only when nothing else was left to do but die, then he was able to stop. And yeah, he got lots of, you know, he was very lauded for all his positivity and determination, but he couldn't have accomplished any of it if it hadn't been for the presence and determination of his wife. You know, because behind every great man, right? Yeah, we all know. It was incredible because even though she was separated from him, she'd immediately stepped in to join forces with him and his doctors. And she was there to support him in his own determination. And he'd had his own coaches. Remember that guy who sent him those quotes, right? We do so many things wrong unwittingly without meaning to, right? That's what unwittingly means. While we're trying so hard to be good and to accomplish and to achieve. And I just wonder, can we learn these lessons before we're about to die? Can we realize that the weight of the world is not on our individual shoulders? That we can only achieve truly great things when we join forces with others? Can we learn that it's okay to need and ask for help? That it's okay to be vulnerable? The place to start is simply by being present. So let's start by learning to be present. I think that's a good beginning, and it's the hardest thing to learn, but it's the way to start. So may it be so, and please say amen, and if you can, leave a comment, go to my website, realrabbinyc.com. You can go to the blog page, and you can leave a comment in the comment box under this week's blog. And also check out my other offerings. And I hope we have a good Shabbos. I hope we all have a peaceful Shabbos. Until next week. Bye.